All right. Good morning, everybody. You're going to see me turn a little bit so I can get into the mic. Okay. So hope you can forgive me for that. Here I want to talk a little bit about, a lot about a practice that you all are vaguely familiar with, or some of you very familiar with, called Metta Vipassana. I thought I would return back to the basics. Those of you who have been working with me for a while know that this is usually where I start everybody, and also really where I finish. And I just thought we could do a guided practice on Metta Vipassana, and then also talk about why Metta Vipassana might be a more practical and more transformative practice. There's an argument to be said that any meditation practice that you're doing is a good one. So whether you're doing mindfulness of breathing, anytime you choose to sit and be in your experience in the way that you do when you practice, always has a benefit. But sometimes I think we want to be more calculated than that. And I'll take a page from my good friend George Haas, who would often say that each meditation that we do, every meditation practice has an insight that we're trying to gain. And this is actually very well organized, especially in the Burmese school of meditation, the Burmese Sayadaws, which is really kind of, I think the best school of meditative training. The people who I trust the most when it actually comes to mind and heart cultivation is the Burmese lineage, monastic lineage, because they've been at it for a very long time. They sit for 18 hours a day. They're very much informed by the Pali texts. And their whole premise is understanding the mind from a moment-to-moment phenomenological experience and then trying to see ways in which we can intervene on the process of the mind and its tenacious tendency to create suffering for us, which I'm sure you're probably aware of that part of your mind. And so reason why Metta Vipassana is good is if we kind of look at Metta versus Vipassana, Vipassana, one of the key things that we're trying to establish in Vipassana practice, as I'm sure you all know, is trying to have insight into what's known as the three characteristics, right? So trying to have insight meaning being able to see clearly with your own eyes in present time experience. That's all insight means. It means that you're seeing something actually happen in real time and you're getting some real self-efficacy. And you're getting some empirical data that, oh yeah, this is actually really happening because I can see it with my own eyes, which is the Pali term ahipasako, which means to literally see with your own eyes. And as you probably know, if you see it with your own eyes, it's a lot easier to buy into it, isn't it? In the clinical world, self-efficacy is kind of what we're looking for. It's trying to see for ourselves that this has value. The problem with that, though, is I think for many of us, and this is why Metta Vipassana was taught to Westerners, particularly my first teacher, Stephen Smith, learned this, is that insight into Vipassana qualities, into impermanence, into ever-changing, into dukkha, unsatisfactory, selfless, anatta. So we're seeing that things are constantly changing, things are constantly unsatisfying, and things are constantly not us. That can be kind of a horror show for a lot of us. Having insight into the three characteristics can be, for many people actually who practice this stuff on Vipassana retreats, who have these insights, the majority of the experience is actually scary and overwhelming because it just cuts at the fabric of everything that we've come to realize. And the problem with that kind of just penetrative seeing is there's no intentionality around how are we going to have a relationship to this? Because if this is quote unquote how it is, it's scary, it's uncertain, you know, everything that we thought was true isn't true. It's actually really, if you look at the world right now, it's kind of a ripe time for this teaching. But if we don't build a relationship to that, then it kind of can become all for nothing. And so monastics who have actually already made a choice to actually put the world aside, you know, they've decided to not be in and of the world. You know, they don't deal with money. They don't have sex. They don't do any of the crap that we do. They've literally dedicated their entire life to Dharma practice, which I think is great, but I haven't done that. I'm not going to do that. And I suspect none of you are either. So then it leaves the lay people, people of the world with kind of, if this is true, well, how do I navigate the world? And so what they started to incorporate was bringing the metta heart practices, integrating those into the qualities of these characteristics. So may I be at ease is the phrase that, you know, that I use. That's my primary, to me, when I think about metta, that's the phrase that makes the most sense to me, is may I be at ease with whatever it is that's happening, with the smoke, with the political landscape, with all of the things that are happening. I'm not dismissing it, but I'm acknowledging that I want to be at ease in the face of the challenge and of the difficulty. So there's actually really, on a very biological level, there's an intentionality in the cultivation of safety. So actually, when we're doing metta vipassana, we're actually training ourselves to become more homeostatic, which is more being fundamentally at ease in our somatic nervous system in face of whatever the external events are. And we know from sixth grade biology that as mammals, this is actually what we need more than anything else, is to become homeostatic. And so... just coming into terms with that. So knowing that things change, which I'm sure you're all aware of, doesn't necessarily help me deal with change. So with the vipassana, with the mindfulness, there's the recognition, and then there's the relationship. So metta vipassana is really, in the simple terms, is a system of recognizing what's arising as clearly and as accurately as we can, and then feeling into acknowledging what is the relationship that I'm having with this experience that's arising. And a lot of times most people, I would argue most Vipassana teachers, insight teachers, they only get you halfway there. They help you acknowledge what's arising, and then your job is to kind of try to deal with it. And so a lot of times I can get that first one. Okay, what's arising in my experience is a lot of fear and uncertainty and kind of doomsday emotional experience. And my relationship to that is anger and fear. And then because the relationship to that is not metta, is not able to meet it, then what happens is actually I become overwhelmed. And then I kind of ratchet up my thinking and my emotions and my nervous system, they kind of ratchet up. So there's lots of recognition going on, but there's very little acknowledgement or very little understanding of that. The relationship I'm having to this experience is destructive. And so to me, that's also the experience of what we would call hypervigilant. So most of my adult life, because I started practicing mindfulness at a very early age, the awareness and the recognition strategy or skill actually came pretty easy to me, but I could never really get the next part of it. So I'd be hyper aware of what's going on. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what's going on, and I fucking hate all of it. You know? So it's like, I just want to stick my head back in the sand at that point. So it's like, well, there's an aspect to it that's incomplete. So if we look at mindfulness as a meditative path factor, and we look at the problematic nature of this right mindfulness and this wrong mindfulness, if we get out of the weeds on right and wrong and we just use the actual accurate term, which is sama, which means complete, is that a lot of times the mindfulness or the awareness, it's just not complete. It's not finished. It's not fully liberated, we might say. And for those of you who are hypercognitive, which is probably half of you on the screen here today, the downside of that is you have this great hypercognitive experience. So there's lots of recognition of what's going on, probably lots of recognition of what's going on internally, externally. There's lots of awareness, but there's not always a great ability on how to integrate metta into the awareness. And that's really what we're doing in metta vipassana, is we're integrating metta into awareness as a general rule of thumb. And actually, I would even argue that probably you're better off defaulting in moments and situations in which you're just not sure what to do, in which you'll probably find many of those, probably better to default into the metta than to default into the awareness and what's arising in the awareness. Because the problem is, the recognition of what's going on will often kick thinking on too much, especially if what it is that you're aware of is scary or upsetting or uncertain or these kinds of things, it's more likely that you're going to get pulled into trying to fix, to solve, to change, to avoid, to control, and you'll lose. You kind of become a head without a body at that point. You know, your head kind of becomes a spaceship and it just sort of launches off. And then, you know, you're just left there. And the body, the emotional body, is just left there kind of feeling bad about it until the mind comes back and gives you some sort of message that everything's okay. But the mind never comes back with that message, does it? It always comes back to like, oh, you thought it was bad before? Fucking check out what I found out. I was on the internet today. Now I'm totally convinced that we're totally fucked. And the body and the emotions like, oh, cool, great, thanks. Thanks for doing that research for me. I wasn't already totally torn up about this. And so that's just change. So there's that, the reality of change, which you all are aware that things change. But are you at ease when you're dealing with real change? Probably not so much. So again, this is not a know that, it's a know how. Yes, I know that things are impermanent. Big deal. You don't really get much credit for that. Sorry, y'all. Do you know how to relate to it and how to work with change when it's actually happening? Do you know that things are actually to some degree unsatisfying? Do you know that there's dukkha in life? You probably do all know that. Do you know how to be with that experience in a way that's not destructive? Sometimes, probably. And then the hardest one of all is the self here, the teachings on anatta, which I talked about a little bit last time. But when you're having what my friend George Haas calls, the way they think about it, I think about it, is experiencing a big arising of self. Now, you've probably noticed moments in your life and in your day. You ever notice moments where there's just lots of you going on? There's lots of self-referential, there's lots of defensiveness, there's lots of like, I'm like this and the world's like that. Well, that's just the arising of self. That means there's lots of you going on. And in that experience, the message that I typically have gotten is either I'm not okay, it's not okay, it's not going to be okay, it's all this, you know, not safe, not okay. Problem. And so in that experience, then of course the mind has to come to the rescue, as it always does, to fix, change, control, or avoid, or whatever it needs to do to make that go away. When actually the best thing to do is to drop the mind and come back into this healing field of metta and be like, okay, this is really difficult. This is really challenging. Things are really scary. Things are really changing. I don't actually know what to do, but let me be okay right now first. And so, of course, we know pretty much without a doubt and just kind of general mental health that when we are not in fight and flight, when we actually are in a resting point of homeostasis, if we're at ease, our mind just functions way better. We just do better. I mean, it's just not actually rocket science. It's like when our system is integrated, we do much, much better. So the question becomes, when we know we're out of that, what maybe we could call, sometimes it's called a window of tolerance. How much can I tolerate before I go, before, as Dan Siegel says, before I flip my lid and I go full bore, hypervigilance, hyperactive? Can I recognize that? And then can I cool down? So once we're out of our zone of tolerance, or once we realize that we're just really in that kind of what I call pre-suffering mode, I'm not suffering yet, but I'm pretty close. I need to actually ratchet back down, because what happens is the more ratcheted up we are, this is where actually the whole teaching on tanha becomes important, greed, hatred, and confusion, is that reactivity, we would probably call it. It's interesting because it's fueled by a fire, which is what greed, hatred, and delusion are. They're fires, and there's a burning quality to it. And once we're in that reactivity and those burning qualities are there, really the only strategy at that point is to get out. There's really nothing. Either you get out or you suffer, basically, is kind of the deal. So if you can recognize, so that becomes something worth of recognition. Okay, recognizing I'm in that space again, I need to cool out. And the good news is, if you can recognize that, you already know, y'all know how to cool out. It's like not that hard. It's the hard part is to recognize it and to be able to acknowledge, like, this is not going to get me anywhere good. This really is not going to end well. And that can be really, really hard because the contents of your thoughts, of your views, of what you think is going on can be very, very compelling. It can be kind of an emergency type of feeling situation. So it's a really difficult moment to negotiate for lots of us, depending on how high or how intense that experience can be. And I found over the years that actually knowing that that was happening didn't really help me. I'd be fully aware of what was going on, and I couldn't do anything except for just basically try to wait it out or try to distract myself with something else, by eating something, by watching something, by doing something, which isn't terrible, but, you know, it's not, you know, I think we can do better. We can do better than that. So, that's maybe a lot, but that's to me, in my mind, this is the baseline. If you're going to develop any sort of contemplative meditative skill, this is the one to have. This is sort of, I think, the baseline, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, which is really that ease, peaceful, this moment as it is. So we'll do a kind of a guided practice on metta, metta vipassana here, so we can get a sense for how that might look. And we can have some discussion about that. Probably do this for maybe 15, 20 minutes or so. That sound all right? All right. So you can just find a comfortable upright way to sit. And so because we're doing metta vipassana, we will start with the metta and we will try to establish a quality of metta, and then we'll move into the vipassana. So as we begin, you can just try to bring your full awareness into the present time experience by just acknowledging or recognizing the quality of mind right now, the intensity of thoughts, whether they're restless or lethargic, if there's a lot of wanting or not wanting, if there's doubt, confusion. So you can just kind of feel into the energy behind your eyes, at your temples, center of your forehead. And that's usually where we feel thinking as a kind of sensation. We might find that actually we live there under a kind of vice of stress, just cranking down on the mind. So to begin to neutralize that or to integrate that into the mind-body system, to just pour that energy of the mind down into your body. So just imagining that you're pouring your mind down into your body. And even as you breathe in, as you draw the breath across the nostrils or through your mouth, just as the body sends the breath down into the chest, the belly, send the awareness down into the body alongside the breath. Breathing in. Breathing out. as we breathe in, we're just openly receiving whatever it is that's arising. And then as we breathe out, we're letting it go. Breathing in an honest reflection of how things are right now. Right now it's like this, breathing that in. Breathing out. Any sense of wanting it to be otherwise. And just practicing that in silence for the next minute. And then stabilizing the awareness in the seated body, the breathing body. And then allowing your attention to rest on the heart center. If you like, you can place your hand over your heart if that's helpful. From the heart center across to the shoulders. As if there was a straight line being drawn across there, and just really feeling the rising and falling of the breath right there. And just letting your attention rise and fall on the slow and steady rhythm of the in and out breathing. And as you connect and sustain your attention with this part of your body, see if you could begin to incline the mind, if you can begin to feel into or acknowledge your own deep wish, your own desire to be free right now, to be content, to be at ease. Your own desire to be okay in this world just as it is right now. And as best you can, allowing the mind to be at ease just in this one moment here now. Not yesterday or tomorrow or an hour from now, but just right now, this possibility of being non-reactive, being easeful, present to your body, your own sense of feeling. And here, this is a radical acceptance of allowing things to be as they are without trying to change or fix or control anything. And this quality is defined by a sense of being present and being at ease. I'm right here, and it's okay to be right here. Presence and ease. And from this place of presence and ease, collectedness, not necessarily easy or comfortable, but just as it is now, from this place of presence and ease towards the conditions you find yourself in, just inclining and opening the mind to the reality of change, of constant change. Impermanence, hard at work in every moment of our lives. Everything is in a constant state of change. And even as you sit here to see if you can acknowledge that to be with your own direct experience is to be with change. The breathing is changing. Sense of the body is changing. And the reflection is, may I be at ease with change? May I be at ease with the changes in my life? May I be at ease with the changes in this world? I be at ease with change. May I learn to embrace the ongoing, consistent reality of things ever changing. And opening the practice, the experience to acknowledge what also comes with change can be a feeling of difficulty, of uncertainty, of feeling dissatisfied, the reality of dukkha, all of that which is hard to bear in mind, unwanted. And extending this quality of metta acceptance towards that. May I be at ease with the difficulty, the challenges, the fear, the uncertainty in my life. May I be at ease with this reality. May I be at ease with my own life, my own sense of being here, getting old, fear of losing this life. May I be at ease with all of the things that are happening that I do not want to be happening. May I be at ease with all of the ways in which I'm not getting the things that I want. May I be at ease with the reality that most of the conditions are beyond my control. And lastly, opening to any sense of yourself that you can acknowledge right now, of you, being a person living in this world with all of your plans and memories, fears, all of the things that come with having a self. So many things to take care of, so many things to worry about. So much work to take care of this self. And extending a kind and friendly attitude to yourself, from yourself. May I be at ease with myself just as I am right now. May I be at ease with my body just as my body is right now. May I be at ease with my mind just as my mind is right now. May I be at ease with my heart, my feeling, my emotion, just as it is right now. And just trying to understand that yourself is not a problem to solve, but a relationship to foster. May I develop a kind and friendly relationship with myself, just as I am. The self is only a problem when you have decided that it is. And acknowledging that this mind does not belong to me, but it is my responsibility to take care of it. And so for the last few minutes in silence, just taking care of yourself, taking care of your mind, one moment at a time, extending kindness as far as it will go internally, to all of the dark corners. May I be at ease, may I be kind and friendly towards myself just as I am right now. So here, feeling into whatever quality of metta, of a kind, friendly acceptance attitude in your experience. And this vipassana to see clearly. But not about seeing things accurately, but seeing things through the lens of kindness.